RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back to Green Justice, everybody, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. This week, we're saying some mea culpas and doing the rosary and, you know, trying to get absolved of our badness, I guess.
All our badness.
Well, not our badness.
Our mistakes. Our bad choices. Bad choices always sounds like, you know, what my kindergarten teacher would say. You've made some bad choices. You go sit in the corner and think about what you did.
Some
other people's bad choices with you.
Some of these characters do need to go to the corner and think about what they've done, I think. There are a lot of, shall we say, questionable choices that they
make. Is there any in the show that does not? I mean, can you think of one person that has not made some questionable choices in the last 5 years?
In the last 5 years? Well, I was going to say Captain Pike, he's pretty rock solid. I mean, I think he's doing a good job leading the ACU. So.
Yeah, well, now he's letting a known murderer loose. So.
Well, maybe. Yeah. So, I got your back. So. So what episode are we going to be talking about this week here on Green Justice, Josh?
We are going to be discussing episode 14 from season 5, The Sin Eater. Also good with a side of mashed potatoes and a roll, a little gravy on top, and some au jus is always good when you're eating your sins. But
I was going to say, is this the guy from 7, John Doe?
Yeah, I think so. It's his cousin. All right, it aired on February 22nd, 2017. Was written by Barbara Bloom and Jenny Lynn. Oh.
New names there? Even
did new names, and I didn't notice until just now that it was a dual women writers there. So I am very happy to see a lot of women writers on the CW shows. There's a nice variety. So, speaking of women, directed by Mary Lambert.
Hey, good job, Mary.
Or is that Lambert? Lambert.
Lambert.
Okay. All right. Well, let me tell you a little bit about this episode. Because, as you know, hell hath no fury, like a black-clad, vengeful serial archer's mother scorned.
Mm-hmm.
When Oliver confronts whom he believes to be Prometheus's mother and asks for a little information about her wayward son, well, she pretty much refuses to be any help, and that spins Oliver's week down the spiraling tubes of disaster. Now, first, Carrie Cutter, China White, and Liza Warner escape from prison and create a trail of corpses looking for Tobias Church's hidden $100 million.
Of course they do.
Then Oliver's journalistic girlfriend, Susan Williams, pops the question. Are you Green Arrow?
You're just funning me, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, he does what every man in love who's trying to impress someone he's really getting close to would do. He lies through his teeth.
Young love.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes Thea decide to help her brother out and, you know, utterly destroy her career. Next, after an anonymous tip that Green Arrow killed Detective Malone, Captain Pike sicks the ACU on our hero, preventing him from catching the ladies on the run. But you know what? After a pep talk about taking responsibilities for others' sins, Oliver realizes that the mayor can come to the rescue once again. So he talks to the good captain, and then he goes after the malevolent ladies and tells Thea that he's a little disappointed in her, but you know what? Everything will be okay, gosh darn it. Looks like we can end the episode with a Brady Bunch moment. Well, you know, until the breaking story about the mayor covering up the death of Malone. Well, you know, maybe next week.
Oh, shoot. Just when you thought it couldn't get any worse.
it was just looking so good there for a while. You know, he sits Thea down at the table in the kitchen. Alice makes him some tea, and he's telling her how she got to learn a lesson from this. But
I was waiting for him to come home and see the mysterious intruder and put an arrow into the back of Mrs. Brady's sculpture of Mike. So,
please. The Blu-rays cutscenes. That would be good.
All right. Well, there was some news this week, but really it was mostly just about talking about where, you know, what they were doing with the characters and what's coming up on future episodes of Arrow. Nothing nothing that I guess we know. It's stuff we don't normally share here, so I didn't really want to go into that.
Promotional interviews and things like that.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're, working on continuing to figure out who Prometheus is, so they had some more information. And, Mark Guggenheim teasing all sorts of, possibilities and things like that. So we'll be looking forward to that and seeing what's going on. So I wanted to get into talking about this episode, and as we usually do, I want to start with the title of the episode, The Sin Eater, which I don't know that I'm familiar with this term. I know there was a character, I think, in Marvel Comics called the Sin Eater at one point, or maybe it was a storyline from like Spectacular Spider-Man or something like that. But basically, as Anatoly described it, it's a person who consumes a ritual meal to basically magically take on the sins of another person. So Anatoly talked about it where someone would die and they put the body out on the edge of town with like food on him, and then someone would come and eat it. And when Anatoly was describing this, I'm guessing he meant someone comes and eats the food, not actually eats the person, because that would be gross.
That would be gross.
have you ever heard of this before?
You know, I don't. For some reason, it sounds familiar in the back of my head, but I can't place where or, when I would have heard it. It was new to me on the show. I wouldn't have been able to tell you what it was. So, interesting. It's one of those. What do you call the old tales? The old
wives'
stories.
Tales?
Not the wives' tales, like a fable or folk tale kind of thing.
kind of like a parable, maybe.
Yeah, a parable. Yeah, it teaches you a lesson, right?
That has a moral at the end. Weren't we talking about morals last week?
I think every once in a while we have morals on this show.
No. But we were discussing the use of morals, not our morals, just morals.
That's what I meant on the show. Yes, because there tends to be morals.
So anyway, Anatoly in the flashbacks thinks that Oliver is a sin eater, even at that point, 5 years ago, that he very much takes the wrongs that other people have done and blames himself for them and tries to internalize, I guess, their issues. So he feels guilt for other people's sins. Do you know people like this?
Oh my gosh, are you kidding? Oh yes, I guess without revealing too many personal details, I would say to some degree, I think I do that in my life often,
Oh, really?
Especially with, I think so. Especially with family members. And to a point, I think part of that stems from as a teacher, whenever someone in my class does something that, is against the rules or
sinful,
does some kind of harm. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to go that far. I mean, yeah. my classes are generally pretty good, but I always feel responsibility for that. I could have prevented it,
Oh, right. My manager has a saying, and it's basically like, if you screw up, I can't yell at you if I didn't tell you that you shouldn't do this. So she often has little things where all of a sudden she'll just say, hey, don't forget to X, or, by the way, I just want everyone to know that you're supposed to blah, 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 because then when you don't do it, she can yell at you. But, She knows. I don't know that, but I wouldn't consider that like being like a sin eater. I don't know. This, it just seems so, calling someone a sin eater. I mean, it just, there's, I don't know, such a, there's so much to that. It seems very overblown, I guess.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I suppose mine, yeah, there's maybe not so
it's
much
like a,
sin,
you know,
so.
I don't know. And maybe I don't look at sin properly. Maybe it's a, for me, it's sin with a capital or a lowercase s, and, you know, other people look at it as a capital S. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know anybody to the extent of Oliver by any means, but I mean, he's been doing that since the very beginning. I mean, I feel like he was taking responsibility for the sins of his father. Right? I mean, I think that was even a title of one of the episodes,
it
right?
Was.
Wasn't it?
Yep.
Sins of My Father.
Yep, Sins of the Father.
One of the shows we watched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was a title of one of these episodes. So this, you think this is a service that Oliver provides?
I think so, yeah. He's got a website. You can, you know, click the degree of the sin, and he'll charge you a little bit extra for some of the bigger sins.
Yeah, it's a new kind of thought for me. I just find it interesting the way that he, you know, that they're describing this, because I you know, I wouldn't have looked at it this way. I guess it seems maybe more religious, though it's not. I guess based on the Wikipedia article that I was kind of looking at about it, it's just more of a, like you said, kind of a fable, or not a fable. What'd we call it? A parable.
A parable, right.
Yeah. So, but Oliver definitely does blame himself for the grief that others cause. You know, so if you were to break a window, he would probably be like, I know Josh broke the window, but it's my fault because we were playing ball together, and, you know.
Right. It's not that he takes responsibility for things. Like, he doesn't say he did them instead of somebody else doing them.
No, it's not.
He's not lying about it in that.
Well, I mean, at least in this specific. he lies about a lot of stuff.
But yeah, there's a lot of lying case, going on.
Yeah. We'll get to lying later. So, well, the next thing I wanted to focus on that there's a lot of sin, and we'll come back to some more of that. But I want to talk about the kind of the main storyline in the present, which is the assassination of Detective William Malone by that coward Green Arrow. So, like you described, there's some information that comes to Captain Pike that tells him that Green Arrow is responsible for Malone's death, which, you know, as a police officer, that'd be very troubling to find out that the vigilante that you've been letting run around, you know, letting have free reign has now become a cop killer.
How do you even complete that sentence that you just said? The vigilante that you are trusting to run around and help people.
It's a fine line that they're running or that they're walking with this. And, you know, I think it helps that Oliver is, you know, as mayor, as we saw in this episode, he was, you know, letting instructing people under him what to do, you know, that the Green Arrow wasn't really responsible and things like that. But I wanted to ask you about the information that letter that came. Do you agree with Oliver's diagnosis of this, that, you know, it seemed like too much of a coincidence, the fact that he visits this lady, the alleged mother of Prometheus, and then a letter comes from Opal City that basically, you know, tells everyone that he was the killer?
I mean, it's so obvious that I almost think that has nothing to do with it. And as much as Prometheus knows about Oliver, somehow, you know, we don't know how Prometheus knows everything about Oliver.
Right.
I almost think that it could have been timed that way because Prometheus knew he went to go see the mother. Yeah, I mean, it was obviously very convenient. I would like to know what was actually in that letter. I mean, what specifically did it say that a captain would be so convinced that a piece of paper that comes in the mail that the police department... he's like, oh my gosh! Oh well, geez. Well, Green Arrow is now. We gotta check this guy out.
Well, I can tell you why. Because inside the envelope there was a quick shot. I took a screenshot of it, and it is a piece of paper that says "Office of the Medical Examiner, Preliminary Report of Investigation by blah blah blah," and then it gives William's name and his address and the fact how old he was and the facts that he died, and as.
But without a second thought or investigating I mean, I guess they didn't show all of it, but it seemed like the captain was just – he was convinced instantly that this information that he just got, I mean, it very well could have been forged. So, I mean, maybe he checked
it could have been forged, but I'm assuming he's seen – because it's from the medical examiner there in Star City. So sure. I'm sure he's seen these before. So, I mean, yes, it could have been forged. You know, but he read through it and he said, you know, the arrows are consistent with the ones that Green Arrow uses. Well, but didn't we already find out Prometheus was melting down old arrows from Oliver and fashioning mm-hmm. new, like, you know, yeah. So metallurgy and all that, whatever. I don't know.
Now, granted, to be fair to Captain Pike there, he did just call him a person of interest. He didn't actually, you know, accuse him of doing it, even though he did, but,
oh, okay.
So he did just, that's what he's told. I think when Oliver was talking to him or something like that, or I can't remember exactly which.
I think it was, cause Oliver and, well, Oliver was there when he got the letter. And then there was the meeting between Adrian Chase, Quentin Pike and Oliver, I believe. And then Oliver went back and talked to him a couple more times to tell him that the Green Arrow was sorry.
It also raises some questions about how Prometheus would get this information.
How Prometheus would able to get the physical paper to send it, you mean?
Right. Mm. Because, I mean, if there was some kind of a, let's say, an attack on the medical examiner and they stole it, you know, or they, you know, it was taken by force, the police would know about that. So it wasn't done like that.
Right. We know that it was suppressed by Adrian Chase, the DA.
Right.
Hmm. All right. Do you have any new thoughts about the Prometheus mystery? Because I don't feel like there was really a lot to go on here, but...
I don't feel... I agree with you. I don't think there was a lot to go on. I am still... I don't want to say convinced. I'm feeling very sure that it's not who Oliver thinks it is, though. I do not think it's the son of this man that he killed 5 years ago. I really just don't think it's that. I think it's somebody much more significant, somebody closer to Oliver than this person would be, that knows a lot more personal information, and that's somebody we've seen before. I still believe that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this stuff is misdirection on the writers, which is fine. Hey, that's what makes it fun, right? But
sure.
I don't know. I don't know who it would be, but I still don't think that it is the person they think it is.
Well, my hypothesis at the time of writing my notes, which was 24 hours ago, it's changed. But let me tell you what my hypothesis was at that time. I'm thinking that Adrian Chase is both a vigilante and Prometheus. Now, that may be a bad idea right there, because I can't remember if Vigilante and Prometheus have ever shared screen time or, you know, have ever, like, seen each other in some fashion.
Not that I can remember.
So
I could be wrong, but I don't remember them ever being together at the same time. Maybe it's Clark Kent.
No, he's not wearing glasses.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
So now it could be something where you're talking about how it's misdirection. We, of course, have been assuming that Adrian Chase is Vigilante. And I think I talked a little bit about this the other week, or last week, because Adrian Chase got shot in the shoulder and he was having trouble moving around in the hospital. yet we saw Vigilante shortly after take a shot at this guy. And we talked about it a little bit. It was very hard to tell if he was favoring his right arm or whatever. But the way that Adrian was behaving in the hospital was not a way that I saw Vigilante, like, you know, blanching at anything. So I've seen a supposition online that maybe Adrian Chase is Prometheus and Vigilante is somebody else, possibly this son of the guy that he killed years ago, which would be consistent with the stuff that Oliver was talking to the mom about and why the mom is being so, defensive about it. You know, if she knows
regardless,
that he's Vigilante.
Regardless of whether or not her son is involved in any of this, she still has right to be upset with Green Arrow, right? I mean, her husband really was a bad criminal, but
right,
whatever.
And this was they weren't even married. I think this is like a bastard child kind of thing. You know, it was like his side.
Oh, right,
woman.
Right.
Because they moved
like
her out of town
or something, right?
Yeah, yeah, right. Now, there's another idea that I had that's completely Bashert crazy, which is maybe it's like Oliver from Earth 2, you know, Prometheus.
Ugh.
That would explain the training, you know, the similarity of training and stuff like that. So,
wow, that would be a very wild twist for Arrow.
It would almost be too much.
It would almost be too much. It'd be kind of groovy. You know, if this was a comic book, that'd be kind of a cool little way to do it. Yeah, I was going to say groovy again, but I'm trying. But I don't think they'll do that for the show. But it is kind of a cool idea. I mean, we have other Earth 2 characters on here. We have a new meta on the team, and we have, you know, things that would definitely fit. That would not be out of the realm of possibility for this universe and for the storyline. But
correct. So, I don't know. I'd love to hear from our listeners if anybody has any interesting ideas about, you know, what's going on. Hopefully, we're going to get a little bit more information now. We're starting to head down the path to, you know, the end of the season here. We're over the hump of mid-season, so they need to kind of get moving on this. And it sounds like we might, you know, be getting a little bit more next week. Just the previews looked a little more street fighting, I guess, you know, with Vigilante and Arrow and maybe Prometheus in there and guns and arrows and all sorts of stuff. So,
oh, is it directed by Bam Bam?
I don't think so. I do not.
Oh, okay, darn.
Yeah, I don't.
Because if it is, you'll know there's will be some good fighting in there.
True. No, I don't think he is directing any of the upcoming episodes. He did, what was it? He did like two at the beginning of the season. Or mm-hmm. right after Christmas, or two at the beginning of the season, then they did the 100th episode. Next week's directed by Michael Schultz. Yeah, so nothing else from Bam Bam coming up here anytime soon. Okay, well, as I mentioned earlier, there was a lot of discussion about Sin in this particular episode. And I felt they got a little heavy-handed with this because, as I was describing it to one of my friends who doesn't watch the show, I felt like, you know, they would say the word sin and then they were kind of mugging to the camera. It was, you know, just like, we want to make sure you guys are listening, so we're going to say sin a bunch of times here. And it's not that, I don't know, sin has a specific connotation to me, and you know, like I think the way Thea explained it, she said, you know, oh, I just committed my own sin. It's like, do people really talk like that? I mean, not people that I hang out with, I guess, but I mean, and granted, it was something pretty vile that she had had done, but I don't know.
You know, I can't speak for everybody, but
well, sure you can.
Being around many relatives who are Catholic, uh-huh. I can tell you that it does come up in conversation often.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, maybe, and they don't necessarily look at the camera after they say it.
Right, it
three or four times within a week's period. It does come up in conversation sometimes, especially when they have their, Sunday morning breakfast discussions about things going on in the world or, what they have heard about. But
okay. Yeah. Well, so the first character that we really get into, and I think that exhibits the same kind of level or close to the same level that Oliver has in terms of being a sin eater, is Quentin. He's really convinced himself. Now, granted, he's coming back. He's still in recovery and, he's been through a lot. So I don't necessarily blame him for having these bad thoughts in his head, but he really blames himself for Liza Warner's return to crime. Because she blamed him. And so he's like, oh, geez, and I think he really internalized it. The fact that, she saw him on TV, copping a plea about working for Damien Dark. And she's like, oh my gosh, well, after this guy was so righteous and asked me to turn my life around, and now he's done this, screw him. I'm going to be as bad as I want to be. So he's, I felt he was really going overboard with that, but I don't know. Do you think that's a good read?
Well, the relationship between the two of them is like your perfect storm of conflicting interests. He is a hero. Now, a hero will do this. A hero will be a sin eater and take responsibility for those sins of people around them that they're close to, because they feel it's the right thing to do. They feel like, well, I want to make sure that I'm always doing the right thing, and when I don't and it affects other people, that's on me. So that would be like what a hero might feel. Not all heroes feel that way, but that would be a very heroic kind of attitude, because it's very selfless to take the responsibility of somebody else. Whereas she has the kind of personality that is blame, right?
Right.
So anything that goes wrong or anything that she gets in trouble for or happens to her, she'll blame somebody else. What's your fault? I didn't have any control over it. It's all your fault. You caused this. You made me do this. So those two together can be really bad, because if you get somebody who feels responsibility for it and somebody else is blaming them, they take it on. They take it on, especially because he actually did know her, and they did work together and have a relationship, not a personal relationship, but just a working respectful relationship.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So that adds a little bit more to Quentin, because it's so close,
isn't this what enabler or something like that? Would this be like,
yeah, I think so. I would
those
say
relationships.
So.
Yeah.
I think it's a very parental feeling to feel that responsibility for your own kid,
Yeah. That's interesting that you point out that they kind of, are yin yang to each other with that. I hadn't really pieced that part together, but the way Liza works on this, I know people like this who it's like, they, regardless of whatever happens in their life, nothing is ever their fault, which is amazing. That there's always somebody else that's really trying to sabotage them. I feel really sorry for these people that
I do, because if you really kind of dig deep, this all starts from, it's like a defense mechanism again, feeling bad about mistakes that you've made.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it develops into a habit so much that it becomes your personality.
Or not even mistakes you've made, just inadequacies with your, with something about you. Maybe you don't like your hair color or something like that, and you're just, you can't like yourself. So when other people try to turn stuff on you, you're always pushing back away from yourself as well.
Right.
Another discussion of sin, going back to the flashbacks, Oliver was told that if he steps forward, that all of Anatoly's sins would be forgiven, which I don't know that. Again, can you trust? I don't even remember. Gregor, is that who they were?
Gregor, yeah.
Fighting. I have to tell you, the number of Russian guys are really confusing me because there was the guy with the hood that looked like Eminem that was out in front, you know, with the sunglasses on.
Right.
I can't keep track of all these guys. So, but you know, Oliver, I guess, believes him, and you know, it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to give Anatoly a chance to, step forward on this. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to just, you know, I'm going to present myself. Like, I'm not sure what he was trying to accomplish there other than acting as a good distraction so that Anatoly can kind of sneak around from behind and they can take out the bad guys and stuff like this. But,
well, he did a pretty good job of catching them off guard and taking a few of them out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it comes to, let me, while we're talking about Oliver, Oliver's also, as I discussed earlier, taking on the sin of killing Malone. He really is owning that. And, who is it? Diggle? Or was it Quentin that was having a discussion with him about this?
Got Quentin, I think.
Okay. Where he's, I shot Malone, and everyone's like, Quentin was like, you can't own that because you were put in this situation by Prometheus. So even though, yes, technically you did kill Malone, you're not responsible. And Oliver's like, well, yeah, you know, it's just that doesn't sit well with him. Let me ask you, if you're in a situation like this where someone sets up, like, you know, you're given one of those impossible choices, right? Like, you know, you have to open one of these two doors and something's bad's going to happen to one person or another. And, you know, and if you don't open a door, you're going to get shot or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Can you? I mean, I don't know. I've never, of course, I hope to never have to have any kind of choices like this. But would you really be responsible for what was happening? Like, do you think, like, legally you would even be responsible if somebody died because of your choice, but you were being forced to make the choice?
I don't know. I don't know if about legally. I have no idea if you'd be responsible for that. Probably not. I mean, if you really didn't have any kind of choice. Yeah, I would hope not, too. I mean, Oliver had the same choice when he was on the island with Dr. Ivo, and, you know, he was going to shoot either Sarah or Shadow. And it was a no-win scenario. I mean, this is a Kobayashi Maru, right? I mean, you can't win. You can't succeed. So I think ultimately, you know, he, like with Gregor, he was doing anything he could to get out of that situation. I don't think he thought surrendering was going to save him or Anatoly. I think he was just kind of looking for other angles that maybe he could take advantage of.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's kind of noble, the fact that he's willing to accept the responsibility of the fact that he, you know, he did kill somebody and it wasn't, you know, it was a mistake in essence. You know, it was not something that he intended to do. And rather than being like Liza, you know, he could have just turned around and it's like, you know what, Prometheus put me in this place. I'm not responsible for this. I'm sorry he's dead, but because Billy meant so much to Felicity, I think that Oliver's taking the high road in this case. He's taking responsibility for his actions, but he may be going just a little too far, and I think that's what Quentin's trying to point out to him in this particular case.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he still feels real guilty about just doing it anyway, too. Not even because of Felicity necessarily, but just because it was awful.
Yeah. Because it basically was, you know, because he kills people that are, that need to be killed, basically, I guess, right?
Well, yeah. And that's what led to this happening.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and then finally, we've got Thea, who, as I started off with, who says she's committed this sin. She has planted all this information on Susan Williams' computer. Again, the position she put Oliver in, I felt really bad because Oliver honestly could be saying that I knew nothing about this. Like, I didn't know. I don't know how this happened. And he's truthful. I mean, I think he's being truthful. But in the back of his mind, I mean, he's like, I'm going to kill somebody. It's, you know, it's like.
It's no, we like, can't do that. He's already got in trouble for
right.
that.
That's it, because that's a problem, too. But, yeah, it's, you know, one of these things where it's like, you know, someone, you know, talks to you about something. You know, they're asking you about that really interesting clock you have on your mantle. And then the next day, the clock goes missing. And, oh, my gosh, you know, it's like, how obvious, you know, can this be? It's you know, that it's the same person or, you know, somebody related to them. It was – the coincidences were too strong. And Susan's not an idiot.
No, and that's exactly what happened. Yeah. It just wasn't Oliver that did it. It was his team that she doesn't really know about. But might I offer an alternative suggestion that the ladies could have tried? How about planting some evidence in there that makes it look like Oliver really isn't the Green Arrow? You know? Somehow feeding her some information that made it look like it was just a coincidence. I don't know what they would have done, but they're smart. They're smarter than me. They could have figured that out.
I'm sure there was something in the Helix file that could have proven his innocence or something. Yeah, I don't know, but I feel like Thea has stepped over a line at this point, and I also found it really interesting as Oliver. He ends one conversation intimating something about, you know, what kind of person does this? And I think that's where they end the conversation. And then we come back later and he goes in and talks to Thea, and it's, he points out how much like Moira she's acting. I think they did a good job of writing this, because in the previous conversation, I was like, oh my God, she's acting like her mom. Like, this is exactly what her mom would have done. Like, you know, that we saw with the undertaking and all the things that all the crazy, you know, manipulative deals and stuff that her mom would do to backstab Merlin. And, you know, like the thing where she, sent a thug to kidnap Oliver in the first episode, you know?
Yeah.
So
it was an interesting, comparison that I wouldn't have expected, just because it's been so long since we saw Moira. So, and it's true.
Right. Well, and Thea has been going kind of a different direction with her character. So what do you think about her kind of taking on the mantle of like Moira's manipulative, you know, personality? Is this something you would want to continue pursuing? Is Thea becoming a bad person?
Well, that's a hard question for me to answer. You know, from a personal standpoint, no. You know, I don't want one of our heroes to start going toward the dark side, right? But from a storytelling standpoint, it could be really interesting. So
yeah.
I would be intrigued by where they would go with that. I think him telling her that, though, probably made a big impact on her and will probably help her to not be like that. But maybe that is where they're taking the character.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and so that was, that kind of leads into the whole discussion about Susan Williams, who confronts Oliver about being the Green Arrow, which I thought that was a very, charming and funny way that he got out of admitting it, you know, because I'm sure he likes saying yes, right? You know, so when she asks him, he's like, yeah, wait, aren't we joking? No, of course not. You know, wait, what's going on?
Do you think, was that really what he was, I mean, like, he said it so fast, I was surprised. I'm like, is he really going to tell her?
I was
wondering if he was just answering, like, impulsively,
yeah,
going, oh, maybe I'll go ahead and tell her. And then he's like, that was probably a bad idea.
I agree. I think there was a little bit of that because regardless of how it's presented to the audience, I think what we're supposed to believe is that this is really a real relationship that these characters are having. However much I don't really believe that they're being as intimate as I think the show wants you to believe. But
well, they just don't have enough time to spend on that storyline, on those two characters together for us as an audience to accept it.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting the shorthand of it, I guess. But yeah. I think he really is trying to feel close to her. And, you know, you want to be honest with your partner. And so I think it was partially he was answering on impulse, like you mentioned. But also, you know, he really wants to say yes. But he also, you know, that's a good misdirection, too, for him to say yes and play it off as like, oh, I thought we were joking. Is this what? Of course not, you know. But she obviously has a lot more information there. And obviously she's right. Like Felicity said, you know.
Do you feel like she actually, like she has enough evidence that she knows for a fact that he is the Green Arrow? Or do you think that, I mean, it's just very damning evidence. And, I mean, she's like 98% sure, but she was looking for that last 2% from Oliver. Or do you think she actually just knows?
No, I think it is more damning evidence, and it's very circumstantial. You know, Oliver's in Russia at a time he was told he was supposed to be on an island. Yeah. Okay. That just means he's lying. A character that looks a lot like the Hood, the vigilante, is in Russia at that exact same time. That's really circumstantial, but, you know, yeah, I don't think it would hold up or anything like that. And I do. I think she was fishing to get that information. There may be some other elements that, you know, she has because she's gotten all this information. But it doesn't matter now that, you know, she knows this stuff because she can't come out and say it because nobody believes her anymore because her credibility has been shot. I actually felt sorry for this woman. I feel like Thea went way too far, and I like the scene where Oliver is talking to Thea, and she's like, I didn't mean to go this far. And he's like, of course you did. And it's like, she doesn't say anything. It's like, of course she knows that. You know, she knows how far she went.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. I guess I started to feel sorry for her, and then she said some stuff to Oliver that I'm just like, oh. All right, now she's kind of, I don't know. She's just laying it on kind of thick.
If you're going to keep lying and just open your mouth, then don't say anything, all that
yeah,
part.
But yeah. I mean, I guess we've seen more of what stuff she has done that makes me kind of feel like she's not very trustworthy than he's seen. So and she did come to him asking, and I don't know what her motivation for that was. So maybe she came to him because she was hoping to just know the truth and wouldn't take it and send it to the media. But she said, what did she say? I'm trying to think of the wording, but she said,
on the record,
I have all of this information that points to you as being the Green Arrow. I'm paraphrasing. And now I've been discredited, so now I can't put it out there to the media and let everybody know. I'm like, well, wait a second. he wouldn't want you to do that.
Right.
So as soon as she said that, I'm like, okay, well, you really were going to let everybody know. I guess I really don't feel as sorry for you as I was going to.
So, but Oliver seems to really want to be able to tell people that he's the Green Arrow.
Oh,
and
sure.
The reason I say this is because he comes pretty much close enough to admitting that he's the Green Arrow to Pike. So as the mayor, he goes and talks to Pike and says, listen, I've talked to the Green Arrow. Hey, you've done what? Hey, you know, I know he's a vigilante and stuff like that, but I'm the mayor of the city and I use all the tools that I have. And he's really sorry and he won't do it again. and it's something that he's going to have to live with. And then later, you know, the Green Arrow says to Pike, "I'm sorry for killing this guy. It's something I got to live with." And Pike's like, "Well, that's what the mayor said to me, almost exactly the same way." Hmm. And this guy is no dummy.
I'm glad when he walked away, he didn't go, "Thank you for your time." Yeah, he isn't a dummy.
So I
still think by the end of the season, I think everyone will know. I think the city will know that he is the Green Arrow.
So, okay. Yes, I know we've discussed that before. And now with the potential impeachment of the mayor coming, because this whole death of Billy Malone thing is kind of blowing up in his face, and the fact that Oliver suppressed information with the DA. Do you think that everybody will know and he just won't be mayor anymore? Do you think that they'll figure out a way to be impeached, or is Oliver going to be able to dodge this bullet as well? Something else set up by Prometheus here. So
I don't think he will be mayor anymore, which I'm okay with. The political angle of the storyline has not been as interesting to me as some of the other things.
True.
It's not bad. I don't dislike it. But just like I said earlier, I kind of would like to see getting back to more Green Arrow-y kind of stuff as opposed to mayor-type stuff.
Okay.
Or did I say that earlier? I don't know. Maybe I was just thinking it. I don't know.
Okay. And then the other thing I wanted just to touch on was Dinah kind of coming into her own. I know it was really cheesy, but I thought it was kind of adorable with Felicity presenting her with the mask, the Black Canary mask. And she's like, "Oh, I don't know if I'm ready to fill her shoes." And she's like, "No, it's just a mask."
They're not shoes. We do have shoes.
We got shoes. We got boots, you know, whatever. But she talks to Quentin about this, because now they're peers, because she's joining the police department. Uh-huh. And he basically gives her permission to not fill the Black Canary shoes, but to move on in her place. And I like the way that they're doing this, in the fact that they're not making it, you know, this, "Oh, thank God you're here to, you know, take over from this person that was killed. You know, our good friend was killed in battle, and we need someone to, you know, move on as the same character," and stuff like this. No one's really trying to pressure her into doing this. But, you know, they're saying, "You know, I think you're ready. We think you're ready." And for to have that scene with Quentin, you know, to basically say, "I give you my blessing to, you know, to move on as the Black Canary, if that's really what you want to do," I thought it was pretty cool. My only just hint of concern is that this whole thing's moving along too fast, and I wanted to find out from you, like, do you think it is?
I don't. I think it's going along at a pretty good pace, and I really still like this Dinah character. I really like her.
Yeah.
I like her humility. I like her attitude, and it's not too, you know, pure innocent. It's streetwise, but still, honest and honorable, like you were saying earlier, because I think mostly the reason that she didn't want to take on that costume was because of Quentin. I think it was mostly because of him that she didn't want to. And as soon as he gave her permission, I think they're going to move forward with that, and she's going to start wearing the costume. Uh-huh. But I don't know. Yeah, I kind of feel it's going at a good pace.
Do you think it's because she was moving into the police department? You think that's why she needed to talk to Quentin about this? Or do you think it would have just come up regardless of whether she was doing that?
Well, I think she has to wear the costume because of of being in the police department, like Felicity said.
Right, of course.
You know, knowing Quentin, because she's met him, because he knows the team now and everything, and knowing that he's a cop. You know, cops have that connection, that bond, that brotherhood or sisterhood, too, I guess.
Oh, the brava. Different.
The copva. I don't know what they call it. But they have that connection, you know. I think there was some of that going on between him and her. He and she. Them.
Them. Right. Right. Building castles in the sky. Right. Got it.
Yeah.
My concern is that they took so long to build Laurel up as the Black Canary. And I understand why, because the way they introduced her, she was definitely not Black Canary material. And, it's one of those things. It's like, we kind of figured out how to build this character when we built the first character. And so now when we're adding Dinah Drake into the show, we'll build her in a way to come into the show as being more Black Canary ready, you know, kind of thing. I'm just concerned that they're just going to rush it too fast. The way they're filming it and the way they've presented her, she's just a really engaging, interesting character that I want to see more of. And I appreciate them not wanting to make it about replacing Laurel, but it's about, you know, getting another Black Canary. Just, it's somebody else. And it's things I think about, like, you know, I was having a discussion with someone today about what happens when they want to keep making Captain America movies and Chris Evans doesn't want to do it anymore. Are they going to replace him and having somebody else be Captain America? I mean, another character be Captain America, or are they going to make another character Steve Rogers? You know, and I'm glad they didn't want to bring in, you know, and do something crazy and make, you know, another Laurel. You know, that, well, they have, I guess, with the Earth 2, Earth X, whatever versions of her. But, you know what I mean? It's just,
I do know what you mean. So is there something in particular that you feel would be rushed? Like, is there something that they could do that would really, you would be like, oh, yo, no way, that went way too fast. Is it wearing the costume, do you think?
I want to say that, but I don't even know at this point, you know, because they introduced it as, well, you're in the police department, so, you know, you should at least put the mask on. You know, she was still wearing her leather jacket and her, you know, like black jeans or whatever. She wasn't actually wearing the Black Canary costume. I don't know. I guess it would be if she wants to do it more than the team wants her to do it. Maybe that's what it is. I'm just worried that she's going to be like, hey, this is cool now. I've got the blessing and stuff like this. But so far, she's really not been pushing for it. You know, but she's falling in. You know, again, we don't know what happens in between the week, you know, between each episode. So there's a lot of character building and stuff that happens outside of what we see in the show. She's very much more comfortable. She's training with them. I enjoyed that she had the bow staff with her this week. I didn't even kind of realize that until my second viewing, and I'm like, oh, wait a second. She's got a bow staff, much like Sarah used. So they're taking elements from the different Canary characters they've had on the show and putting it in there. So I don't know. But, yeah, I think it's more if she really wants to, you know, if she starts pushing that she wants to get out there, I think that may be where it feels disingenuous. And they haven't done that, but I don't know. Conspicuously, the one thing we really haven't talked about is the three ladies trying to steal the money from the graveyard. And that's because I was looking forward to seeing Cupid again, because I think she's an interesting character, but they really did not do much with these characters. Liza probably had the most on there, and we kind of talked about her a little bit, but China White was not really impressed by her appearance this week. And, oh my gosh, the Department of Corrections. Can I just tell the Star City Department of Corrections that if you're going to be on a bus with criminals, you don't have an armed officer who can wander around back and forth. There's usually a little, you know, didn't you see Con Air? They've got like a little gate that the cops can't get through, so the gun can't get back to where the bad guys are. It's,
yeah. And how about not and trying not to explain yourself to the you have to. Well, yeah,
that would
be
great.
Fun.
Except that I'm a cop, and we can't do stuff like that. Fraternizing, it's like, just shut up, dude.
So. Yeah, not the best guard. Rest in peace. I didn't. He's not dumb enough that I would want him to, you know, be killed. But
yeah, well, so I don't feel there's really anything to discuss there. But if there was, is there anything else that we didn't cover that you wanted to touch on?
No, you know, those were, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more story with those three women. I thought that could have been intriguing. They're all interesting characters in their own right, you know, and teaming up could generate something kind of interesting. But, yeah, it was just really a way to get to where they needed in the plot with them this week. But I'm okay with that, too. I'm glad they don't kill off characters every single week so that you can't go back and use people that you're familiar with something like that. So, and yeah, you know, that's, they were kicking butt pretty good. They're all talented in their own evil ways.
I guess just some of the banter between them felt really forced to, like, I don't know, China White cuts the one guy's neck and, you know, Cupid's like, hey, thanks for the assist. And she's like, hey, what are friends for? It's just, I know it was all done kind of tongue in cheek and stuff, but
yeah,
didn't really work. So, all right. Well, we got one piece of feedback I wanted to share with everybody this week. This came in via email just before we started recording the show, fortunately. It says, hey guys, wanted to drop a note and first off just say thanks for all the great podcasts. I listened to all three. That would be Green Justice, Scarlet Velocity, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. And they're the perfect companion to these great shows. I love that you catch things I don't, add info on characters, and make predictions, keep track of future news. What inspired me to write was how well you handled last week's episode. I enjoy what Guggenheim and company does with these shows, so I'm willing to watch a preachy episode. But I wanted to say a huge thanks to you guys for how you handled the subject. You presented the angles, the facts, and even researched the facts they present. Who wants homework from a TV show? So anyway, sorry for repeating myself. Thanks again, and please keep up the great work. Andrew from Orlando.
Oh, thank you, Andrew.
Or is it Atlanto?
We'll be down in his neck of the woods here in just over a month, huh?
Yeah, we'll be down celebrating Star Wars with a bunch of our closest 20,000 plus, no, more than that, 100,000 plus friends. I don't know.
Sure. And I'm going to give a hug to every one of them.
I know, but you will. I know you will.
So. Yeah, I appreciate that, Andrew. And you know what? I'm glad that you shared how you felt we did, because I was I think you and I were both very conscious of how to present last week's episode. We had a lot of discussions before we recorded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I'm glad. Hopefully, we hit the mark on that.
There were a few other tweets I saw. People seemed to appreciate, you know, what we did with that episode, and I'm glad we can kind of get back to just the banal, you know, craziness of a normal era episode. So yeah, exactly. So a couple references I did want to touch on here. Again, not a lot of other stuff going on, but I did notice that the zip code for Star City, as shown on the envelope that Captain Pike got, is actually the zip code for Glendale, California. But don't take that into account, because Star City is listed in Washington State, according to the address on the envelope. It didn't say WA after it. So I don't know where this place is. Sometimes it's not Seattle. It's sometimes near Seattle, which means Central City has got to be more Midwestern.
Hey, it's Vancouver. It's Africa. It's Washington. You never know. You never know in these places.
Right. And it rains all the freaking time. That's and in a building in Russia in the flashback, it was so cold that you could see Anatoly's breath. I was kind of shocked
Russia.
By that. Yes. so, well, I'm glad we were able to kind of get our sins out on the table, so to speak, here. But for now, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice. So thanks for joining us.
And if you guys enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes and leave us some feedback. I'd like to see some new 2017 feedback from you guys. Great to hear from you, and it's a good way to share with other people so they can join in. You can also contact us by email. Send it to greenjustice@randomchatter.com or pop over to Twitter and tweet at us at greenjusticepod or visit our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And you can also check out the other shows, as Andrew mentioned here, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which are on the randomchatter.com network. All shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to share us with your friends. Let them know that we do our homework when it's called for. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.